Let them do it electronically. Nobody's going to Farsight.
Except me, said Edith.
No, no, no.
Yes, 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 she countered.
Turning toward him, laying a hand on his bare chest, Edith said,
You can tell the Earthside folks that I'll coordinate their requests for interviews. Tell them Farsight's too small to accommodate them all. So I'll manage things from there, and they can all pool their interviews, just like we did during the war.
I don't want you going to Farsight, Stavanger insisted, but he knew she would go anyway. Sitting alone in her VIP suite at the Hotel Luna, Anita Halleck debated calling Carter McClintock while she was visiting Cellini. She had sensed subtle vibes from Carter when she'd seen him at Farsight. He's interested, she thought. He's curious to know what his father had. Chuckling to herself, she thought, It would blow Morgan's mind if he knew his son went to bed with me. It might give the old man a heart attack. That would be poetic justice. And stupid, she decided. That part of your life is over and done with. No regrets, no looking back. The only part of your life you can shape is the future. Still, she thought, Morgan's thinking of putting money into Professor Ulrich's operation, and Carter's at Farsight to help his father make the decision. Morgan wants to use Farsight to kill my program. That would leave Dan Randolph high and dry after all the money he's already sunk into it. So she put through a call to Carter McClintock. McClintock looked decidedly uneasy when his face appeared on the wall screen of Halleck's sitting room. You're on the moon? He asked, his handsome face wearing a patently forced smile.
At Cellini, yes, she replied. I came for a conference with Dr. Cardenas, but apparently she's detained at Farsight with you.
Not with me, he blurted. She's working with Professor Ulrich, you know. Building the mirrors for his telescopes.
Yes. I'm here to see what progress she's made on the mirrors for my array, if any.
I'm sure she's doing her best, McClintock said.
Of course.
How long will you be at Cellini?
Only a day or so.
Halleck hesitated, then plunged.
I thought we might have dinner together while I'm here.
He blinked at that. I won't be able to get away, he said hurriedly.
That's all right. I'll come over to Farsight, pay my respects to the professor and all that.
McClintock shook his head. I'm afraid that won't be possible, Anita.
And why not?
Farsight is under a lockdown. The accident with the lobber, you know. Cellini's sending an investigation team, and no one else is allowed to come in here until they've made their report.
You're quarantined?
Lockdown, he quickly corrected. No one is allowed into the facility, for the time being. Halleck considered that information for a few moments. Then,
Does that mean we won't be able to get together, Carter?
Squirming, he replied, I am afraid it does.
Too bad, she teased. One of the reasons I came all this way was to see you again.
Carter McClintock fell speechless, and Anita Halleck thoroughly enjoyed his distress. Investigation. Grant stood in the reception area as the four accident investigators filed through the access tunnel from the lobber that had carried them to Farsight. Three men, all of them in unadorned blue-gray coveralls. Engineers from the look of them, Grant thought, and one tall, willowy black woman who was obviously their boss, wearing a sea-green long-sleeved blouse over darker slacks with a necklace and bracelet of jade. She was strikingly good-looking in a lean, long-limbed way, like a professional athlete. Even Nate Oberman at the reception desk seemed awed by her as the other three new arrivals lined up at his desk. She ignored Oberman and walked straight to Grant.
You are Grant Simpson, are you not?
She asked in an accent that Grant recognized as Bantu. That's right, he said. Professor Ulrich sent me here to see that your accommodations are comfortable for you.
I am Letitia Luongo, she said. I am the head of this investigation team. Could you please take me to Professor Ulrich?
Don't you want to go to your quarters first? Unpack, freshen.
Professor Ulrich, please, said Luongo. Business before pleasure, Mr. Simpson.
Trudy Yost sat at one of the consoles in the teleoperations center, watching the data rastering across its central screen. The big display screen on the wall showed a blurry sphere, New Earth. The resolution was poor, but it was the best that Trudy could get from the telescope at Mendeleev. Josie Rivera was working the console next to Trudy, monitoring the construction robots at Korolev Crater. Nate Oberman sat beside her. The other two consoles were unoccupied, dark and silent. Trudy wondered why Oberman was here at the teleoperations center instead of his regular post at the reception center. Not that there's much of anything to do at the launch pad since the lockdown. Then she realized Nate's coming on to Josie. "The accident team from Cellini arrived this morning," Josie said to Oberman. "Yeah, I checked them in," he replied. Looking up from her screen, Trudy asked, "Do you think the investigators will poke in here?" Oberman shook his head. "Probably not. They're outside gathering up the pieces of the lobber. They're not interested in what we're doing." "Good," said Trudy. But Josie said, "I'll bet they do come in here sooner or later. They'll want to stick their noses into everything." "Let 'em," said Oberman. "I've got nothing to hide." Josie gave him a knowing grin.
"What about those vids you showed me?"
"That's got nothing to do with their investigation."
"No,"
Josie agreed. "But it might be the most interesting thing they see while they're here." Oberman made a mock scowl at her. Trudy turned her attention back to her work. Grant spent the day outside, tediously searching for pieces of debris from the wrecked lobber. This must be the way archaeologists work, he thought, as he spotted another twisted chunk of metal. He carefully photographed it before picking it up and labeling it with an indelible marker. He marked its position on the ground from the GPS satellite signal and then deposited it in the cart that trundled faithfully behind him. The ground around the landing pad was strewn with wreckage. Three of the accident investigators were spread out across the area, gathering pieces. The fourth was inside, reviewing the flight monitor's records of the lobber's liftoff. The lobber that had brought in the investigating team sat on the pad now, a squat, dark cone, like some ancient monument. Archaeology, Grant thought again. We've gone from astronomy to archaeology. Walking slowly along the sandy, pockmarked ground, Grant realized that he would have to tell the investigators about his nanomachines. Cardenas says they've got nothing to do with the accident, but I can't keep quiet about it. Not if there's one chance in a million that I caused the blow-up. One chance in a billion. He did not look forward to making his confession. After an hour's session with the quartet of investigators in Ulrich's office, Carter McClintock made it his business to have dinner with their chief, just the two of them in McClintock's quarters. Letitia Luongo was a couple of centimeters taller than McClintock, lean and long-legged with shiny black skin, big, deeply brown eyes, and hair cropped down to a fuzzy skullcap. Not a raving beauty, McClintock thought, but her face was remarkably striking, like some sullen fashion model. And she appeared to be somewhat intelligent and rather shapely beneath her open-necked blouse and snug slacks. She also seemed quite wary once she realized that this dinner would be for just the two of them. McClintock offered her a glass of fruit juice as he invited her to sit on the sofa. She accepted the drink and perched on the armchair instead.
"I thought you had invited the others of my team," she said, her voice a rich, low contralto.
"Perhaps I should have," McClintock answered easily. "But I thought it would be easier to discuss your work one-on-one."
"I see."
She sipped minimally at the juice. "I'm afraid alcoholic beverages are practically non-existent here at Farside," he said as he sat on the sofa alone. No sense wasting decent wine on a woman who's here to investigate us, he thought.
"Professor Ulrich disapproves?"
McClintock made a vague gesture. "Well, let's say he doesn't encourage it." Luongo almost smiled. "Getting businesslike," McClintock said. "How does the nanomachine factor affect your investigation?"
"It's too early to tell," she answered.
"If, somehow, nanomachines caused the explosion, could your team discover it?"
"You don't have the necessary equipment here. We will have to take the wreckage back to Cellini for examination."
"The chief of our technical staff believes that nanomachines might have penetrated the ship's oxygen line." That sparked her interest.
"Does he?"
"It's just a wild idea of his."
"I would like to speak to him about it."